Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. This week, we talk through Chromebooks becoming uncertified in the Play Store, some insights on the new Acer Chromebook 15, the 64GB Samsung Chromebook Pro showing up at Best Buy, Google coming to CES, and Crossover finally showing up in the Play Store with the promise of Windows apps on your Chromebook. Hope you guys enjoy. So as we've continued this podcast series, we're now on our third episode. We really want our audiences to be a part of the conversation. So we went out on Twitter this past week. You can find us there at Chrome Unboxed. And we just asked for a couple questions. And we got a couple good responses. So Tom Mullaney had two questions. He's at Tom E. Mullaney. He had a couple questions. One of which was, why is there no world-facing camera on the Pixelbook? His point is that in doing so, this lacks the true tablet functionality. So guys, tell me a little bit about this and, you know, your thoughts on why maybe Google decided to leave out that world-facing camera and why we're seeing it on others and why this might be occurring here.
We can only venture guesses, obviously, because we don't know exactly why Google does some of the things that they do. But similar to the fingerprint scanner that we actually tracked for months right alongside Eve, it could just have been a situation where they didn't feel like it was aesthetically pleasing, or they felt like this wasn't necessarily an education-focused device. And I don't know that they're going to really market this at the education market or not. It's not really clear because we haven't seen the marketing campaign really start for this device yet. But there could be a number of reasons why they didn't do it. It stinks that they didn't because, again, just like the fingerprint scanner, I wish it was there. I think it would have been an awesome device for it to start, be the first Chromebook to have a fingerprint scanner on it. But it doesn't, and it doesn't have a world-facing camera, and it only has a mediocre front-facing camera, to be honest with you. So I just don't think it was a thing that Google was really that concerned about. That's my opinion.
Right, and I feel, honestly, had never crossed my mind until Tom asked the question, because the only devices we've seen the front-facing, world-facing camera on are the educational devices, and I believe the first device we had, it wasn't just bad, it was horribly bad. I mean, yeah. I get the purpose behind it, especially in a classroom setting, but I just don't think that hit the target for this device. But as an afterthought, yeah, it would have been really nice, but we do have devices on the horizon that actually feature better than decent front and rear facing. We have 8 mm-hmm. megapixel, 5 megapixel on the first tablet that we're hoping to see in the next few months, so who knows?
Yeah, and one other thing that just kind of popped to mind while we were talking about that, you know, the camera app in Chrome OS is beyond terrible. It's real pathetic, and so on
it's real bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. And so as Gabriel was saying, the devices that have had world facing cameras, to pick up a Chromebook, a convertible, and take a photo with that world-facing camera is just painful. And so I don't want to say that Google didn't include it on here because they didn't think that they would be able to get the camera software up to date. Because ultimately, hopefully, the Google camera that ships on the Pixel and Pixel XL and all those things will eventually work on Chromebooks the way it should. But for right now, there's really no software that does any camera any justice. So even a good camera on the Pixelbook would kind of be a waste for the time being. So Hopefully they get all that stuff sorted before the tablet shows up.
Yeah, Tom had another good question here. He asked, will Google for EDU embed stylus functions into Chrome OS for touchscreen Chromebooks?
And that's something we've seen that question a lot on the consumer side of it, not really so much on the education side of it, but there is a force enable stylus functions in the Chrome flags menu, probably not something an education institution is going to be messing with. But the problem with that is even though it forces the stylus function, as Robbie found out today, an aftermarket or third-party stylus on a Chromebook that wasn't designed with a stylus in mind is just it's almost as bad as the Chrome OS camera.
Yeah, and I speak to that real quick. The I couldn't tell you what which one. It was one of many on Amazon that has good ratings, and maybe they're fake ratings, but it has good ratings, and it's an active stylus, meaning it's powered, and so it can create the capacitive touch point with a smaller tip. But there's nothing in the screen that's there to receive that input, so I literally couldn't draw just a straight line. It looked like I was my hand was shaking or something, and it was just squiggly no matter what I did. So I tried this on an iPad, on a phone, on a couple different Chromebooks. The lag on it was decent, but it was the inability to actually draw a straight line that was really frustrating. And so,
seems kind of important.
Right. And so, like, it just even trying to write, you know, write my name, it looked like, you know, my hand was shaking the whole time. And so, they could eventually get this to the point where, hey, they're going to enable it. And if you want to use one of those big fat-tipped capacitive stylus, that's going to make a better line, at least, than these other active styli. But until we see something that works with non-stylus equipped Chromebooks, I don't know that they're going to be compelled to actually put that tool down there for ones that don't come with a stylus.
Yeah. Another good question from Richard Tan at Richard_Tan. He asks, Acer Spin 11 or versus Asus C213NA, which do you recommend?
I would have to say the Spin 11. Just feels the build was better. Stylus input was the same. Well, and the one we got didn't even have the regular screen on it. Remember, it had that like the matte finish display on it. So maybe that changes a little bit. There were good points on both of them, honestly, and we have reviews working of both of those things.
Yeah, and that's
so you'll be able to check those out soon enough.
And of the three new EDU devices, the X360, the Acer, and the Asus, all Apollo Lake based, we haven't had any experience with the quad core, but the dual cores, you're dealing with the same internals, same RAM. Your performance is for the most part the same. I do feel like the Spin performed a little bit better, but as far as build quality, I would take the Spin hands down. The Asus wasn't bad.
It had a really good keyboard, right?
Yeah, good keyboard. The HP, and maybe it was an early model and it was a first run, it was a piece of garbage. It really was.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, we've got those reviews filmed actually already, and so you'll be seeing those relatively shortly. So there's just a lot of things came up between the time that we filmed those reviews and now, obviously, with the October event, Pixelbook, and all that stuff. So those reviews will be coming. But I think across the board, yeah, the Spin 11 feels like the better device overall.
Yeah.
Kind of moving on here, we noticed, was it last week or week before, there were a couple Chromebooks that ended up being uncertified on the Play Store. Kind of a bit of an issue that the Google team was working through. So, you know, what happened and what was the resolution and where are we now?
Well, the initial happenings were a bug report on what's called the Chromium Bug Tracker. It's where people report issues and developers deal with issues, and they're referred to as bugs. The Pixelbook, someone had posted that their Pixelbook in their Play Store settings, not in their Chrome OS settings, but if you go to the Play Store, go to settings, at the bottom of the settings, just like in your mobile device, it says Play Store certification or something to that effect, and they were being listed as uncertified. When we checked devices here, the Samsung Pro was showing uncertified in Chrome OS 62. This all happened around the release of Chrome OS 62. And then there were a few other devices. It looked like it was only on certain Intel devices. And there really, no big issues ever really came out of it. The problem was, being that they were labeled as uncertified, the Google Play Store was not allowing users to install certain apps, because developers can put APIs and services into their apps that prevent them from being downloaded on uncertified devices. And the biggest one was Netflix. People woke up that morning, they got an update, their Netflix was gone. Nobody knew what happened. So
yeah, so they couldn't Netflix and chill. It was sad.
Yeah, which that sounds funny, but it was a big deal, because that was a huge selling point for the Pixelbook at the event. Matt Bocoon's blog post on the Google blog last week. Same thing. Take your movies on the go, download your movies using the Netflix Android app, and now all of a sudden it doesn't work.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I joked about that, but in all seriousness, as Gabriel just alluded to, the fact that Netflix, like if it would have been some other small app, it wouldn't have been a big deal, but Netflix is a huge selling point, and that literally that same day, right, was when Matt's blog post came out on the keynote on Google's blog, and it had listed all the things you can do with your with your Pixelbook. And one of those things was like Netflix. And when we talked to him at the event, when I asked him about the price and how that can be justified, part of what he said and what was really interesting and I hadn't really given much thought to was a lot of people now think of computing in a little bit of a different way. And so we want to see the same stuff we can do on our phones on a desktop, and for the most part you don't see that, and that's one place where the Pixelbook kind of shines because we're running Android apps. So if I want to download my Google Play Store songs and play music, I can download them. If I want to download Netflix to take with me on the go, I can download them, and that's just not possible right now on other devices. Not to say it won't be, but right now it's just not. And so it's kind of a unique thing that, hey, the way that I behave with this mobile device, I could behave with the Pixelbook. And Netflix was one of those prime examples. And so for it to not be working and for there not to be a clear resolution, so when it happened, it wasn't like, oh, guys, it'll be fine in 24 hours. We didn't know what was going on. And especially with what we've seen back and forth with Microsoft and the Office apps working on some devices and not working on others and having literally no clue as to why and no answer from them. It was a little unsettling for something as large as Netflix to just not be working anymore and just to be gone off people's devices. And so we don't know who fixed it. It was either Netflix decided to say, it's okay, we'll just let them see it. Or because I know I got Netflix back on the Pixelbook before I saw the Play Store go back to certified status. So my guess is Netflix.
And that's what it appeared as if they took an immediate attempt at fixing that issue because Netflix was available within a day or two, and then it was another couple of days before the certified issue was repaired. And they never really gave any clear explanation as to what caused it, but what was happening was it wasn't a bug in Chrome OS per se. The Play Store has what's called Safety Net, and it's how the developers determine whether or not a device is certified for the Play Store, and something in the Chrome OS update was triggering that safety net, causing them to be uncertified. And you know, as soon as the update rolled out, devices were showing as certified again. If for whatever reason your device has updated and it's not showing certified, you just need to clear out your Play Store settings and you should be good. So,
well, cool. Yeah, I mean, so you know, there's a resolution.
Sure.
You know, they fixed it. They tried to do it probably as quickly as they could.
Yes.
I would imagine there
when
was
on the poster child of Chrome OS. Absolutely.
Yeah, there were some angry users out there, I'm sure, but this is part of it, and they hopefully, you know, got it resolved as quickly as they could. So, switching gears, guys, let's talk a little bit about the Acer 15. So, this is a device that we actually have here in the office. We're in the review process now, getting some footage of this device, refresh of the original Acer 15. Now we've got some aluminum build and some kind of new things going on. So, you know, what are some first impressions, or, you know, for those that maybe haven't seen anything else about this device, what do they need to know?
One of the things we want to do with this podcast is give a little bit of preview looks at stuff like this. So yeah, we're in the review process and we're passing it around to different people and different people are using it, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I can say from working from it for a couple days, I'm not gonna give everything away here, but the build is way nicer. If you've messed with the original C910, it was super plasticky, really heavy. And if you haven't yet, go to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Chrome Unboxed. You can see the at least the unboxing that we've done already. And some of those initial impressions stuck with me. So the build feels great. The speakers are crazy impressive. The trackpad's pretty good. The keyboard's pretty good. Not mushy like normal Acer keyboards are. The screen is surprisingly good. The touch screen, I'll talk about some of the issues I've had with it. But, I mean, overall, it's such a refresh and such a good refresh of the original device. And they've done such a good job of fixing a bunch of things that were problematic. So it's thinner by a quarter inch. It's lighter by a full pound. And it's mostly aluminum. We say that because it's, you know, it's plastic on the bottom. But no different than the HP Chromebook 13 G1 that was all aluminum, you know, in quotes, but also had a plastic bottom on it, and that's fine. It hasn't caused any issues, and I've honestly not thought about it since I took it out of the box. So, so far, so good with that device.
Yeah, and I think very impressed with the way that it looks. I had talked a while back on my desire for Acer to refresh the Chromebook 14, which is still one of my favorite devices, and it looks like they kind of had that in mind already, but they did it with the 15, so maybe we'll see a 14 in the future as well. But I was super impressed because it's more than just a refresh. Acer has, for lack of a better term, regurgitated the Acer 15 how many times? They have a budget model that they sell at Walmart right now for $179, but it's a great selling device, and it's one of the reasons Acer is the proverbial king of Chromebooks. But this device is a bit more than a refresh. It it looks really good, and it's not just slightly upgrading or slightly improving on previous features. They've added some new things, and you guys, when Robbie gets the full review rolled out, you guys can look forward to that one.
Yeah, so stay tuned. Obviously, ChromaBox.com, and if you want to check out the YouTube channel, specifically youtube.com/ChromaBoxed. So, you know, on a normal Wednesday stroll through Best Buy today, you know, like you do on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
You guys noticed a 64-gigabyte Samsung Chromebook Pro.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we had, who shared that with us? Someone had shared that with us a week or so ago that there was a 64-gigabyte version. And double check to verify. It's only available at Best Buy as of right now. And it's kind of odd because we've been expecting the release of a Core M7, really upgraded version of the Pro. Still waiting on that, but we know it's in the works. We know it's coming. But this is literally just the Samsung Chromebook Pro with double the storage.
It's nothing else changed.
Nothing else has changed. It's $599. So
what price increase is that?
Well, from the original price of the Pro, it was $549.
$549,
so
yes.
It's technically only $50 more than the MSRP of the Pro, but you can get the Pro on Amazon right now for $499, which I have always, since its release at the beginning of the year, have said that's the price it should be. It's a $500, $450 on a good day device, or bad day, I guess, but $600 for an extra 32 gigs of storage is a little hard to condone, in my opinion, because I still lean towards the Asus C302 for the build quality and just the aesthetics of it. And you can get an M3, but you can get an M5 64 gig of the Asus for $650.
Right.
So I'm not saying it's a bad Chromebook, the Samsung Pro with 64 gigs. It is a good Chromebook. I'm using a Pro with 32 gigs right now. I'm just saying I wouldn't recommend buying it for $600.
Yeah, and the only thing I can come to its defense on is with the storage upgrade is as the the Play Store becomes more of a relevant thing for Chromebooks, until they figure out how to... And I don't know that they ever will do this. So, long story short, Android devices with SD cards can have what's called adaptable storage and allow apps to actually be installed. It behaves as internal storage. I don't see that ever happening on Chromebooks because it's so easy to pull those cards out, and it really throws the operating system for a loop when all those files just disappear. Because it's not like just some pictures or something. You know, stuff's installed there that's running possibly in the background and bringing notifications, blah, blah, blah. So I don't see that happening on Chromebooks. And so when we start talking about Android apps and storage, the upgrade in storage is a good thing if you're planning on installing a lot of apps. And so until they figure out how to make those file systems work a little better with SD cards, then I do see upgraded storage as kind of a win. I don't I can't condone 32 gigs at $100 basically is what it works out to be. So if it was still the $50 increase that it was, so going from 550 to 600, great. You know, $50 to double your storage, that sounds great. So if this the new 64 gig ends up dropping down to 550,
right?
Yeah, you know, maybe that's a better deal. But I would still say there's other versions of this thing coming out, and it's cool just to see the fact that we're starting to see some variation.
Well, some variations, absolutely, because we have what, 7 or 8 variants of the C302 overseas.
Right. Right.
We're just now getting our third one here. I'd like to see more RAM, and I'm pretty sure I can speak for the whole team here.
Mm-hmm.
If the Samsung had 64 gigs and 8 gigs of RAM, I would recommend it for $600. But
no, absolutely. Yeah.
It's, if you,
easy.
Manufacturers, if you're listening, more RAM, please.
Yeah. 8 gigs is plenty for Chrome OS, but we don't have enough devices with 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah. Well, speaking of new devices and things potentially to come, you know, we're really excited about going to CES again this year.
Yes.
Last year we were there and we got to see the announcement of the Samsung devices coming out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're really excited to be there this year. We've caught wind that Google's going to be there this year.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about this. What do you think they're going to be doing? What are they going to be showing? What are we going to see in the Google booth, you know, at CES?
Gabriel did some more research on this than I have.
Yeah, so I just I was going through the floor plan, kind of planning out what we were going to do when we got to Vegas in January, just make sure we didn't miss any of the booths that we wanted to check out. And as I had mentioned in my article, there's a Google always has a presence at CES because Google's got their hands in so many things.
Mm-hmm.
So many cell phone manufacturers, Android, the smart homes coming on with the Google Assistant and all that. But they're not an exhibitor. I don't know that they've ever been. They may have been, but I don't know that they've ever actually been an exhibitor at CES. So as I was going through the map, just looking around and just checking, I clicked on exhibitors and clicked on G, and sure enough, there was Google. But they have more than just a booth. They have 8 hospitality suites, which might as well be a whole floor, which means they're going to be entertaining a lot of media. But their booth is, it's not really a booth. As you pull into the CES venue, they have an outdoor area that has gigantic tents.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest one there last year was Gibson. They had
BMW.
BMW had one. These are gigantic. Gibson had a setup that probably, I can't even imagine how many guitars they had in there. Anyways, Google has a booth tent right there, front and center, as you come into the entrance of the main area. And after writing the article I'd written, some people had mentioned the freestanding VR platform,
mm-hmm.
which is highly possible. VR had a very strong presence last year, and I'd say VR and AR will have an even stronger presence this year. I just can't see them having that large of a space for just the VR, though. We've been tracking tablets and detachables for a year now, since CES. And I really, really hope and feel like Google might have something else they're going to bring with them.
Yeah, that would be pretty stellar. Because similarly, last year we showed up at CES just like, hey, we're here, we're just going to see what's happening. And we knew Samsung was hosting an event. And we honestly just crossed our fingers and hoped that the Chromebook that we've been tracking, and we're pretty sure it was Samsung at the time, because I think in October or something we figured out it was the Samsung Chromebook Pro.
Right.
We didn't know that there was a Plus. We didn't know a lot about it. But we knew that there was something coming. We just honestly, I was prepared to sit through that keynote and then get done and, again, not mention Chromebooks, because that just seems to happen a lot. And I remember sitting there and it came up on the screen and they started talking about Chromebooks. And I was like, oh my God, they're talking about Chromebooks at CES at the keynote. So
I was like, I need to turn the camera on.
I mean, it was just like, it's actually happening. They're talking about, because they were talking about like washers and dryers right before it. I was like, they're not going to talk about Chromebooks now. And so, you know, who knows? We might get out there and they might talk about their new VR, like HTC's building a standalone Daydream headset. They might talk about that and then basically have a pop-up shop, maybe, but right. That doesn't explain the need for all the hospitality suites. So who knows what Google's got up their sleeves. They weren't there last year, and that would have been you know, a few months right after them deciding, hey, we're going to be a hardware company now. And so right. maybe after a year of thinking, hey, we're a hardware company, we got to have presences at these types of shows. Who knows? Who right. knows what we might see?
And there's been mention of that as well. If Google is going to launch some new hardware, that they would do it at I/O, which is their annual developer event in May. And I tend to disagree with that. They're kind of making a theme that their hardware event's in October, but now they have just out of nowhere decided to show up at CES. I/O is a developer event. Most people have never heard of I/O. Google is clearly targeting the general public with their marketing, mm-hmm. commercials on television, mm-hmm. a whole new YouTube channel for Chromebooks. They're not going to launch a new line of hardware at an I/O event. They might mention it, but they're not going to launch it there. So they're going to launch it at a major venue like their event or CES. And if they have more Chromebooks in the works, they're not going to wait until October of 2018 right. to launch them. So, and then we can't forget the other manufacturers. Samsung did a huge thing doing what you said, launching these Chromebooks on a major platform. I mean, Samsung, if you've ever watched any of Samsung's events, they do it all out, mm-hmm. and this was no exception. So now other manufacturers have a platform to say, hey, look, we've brought our devices now. So
sure. Yeah, you know. So there's no telling what we might end up seeing.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we were just excited to see a Chromebook sitting on display up right. on the Samsung stage. Right. You know, yeah. I mean, it was up there, you know, along with the washer and dryers. Okay.
There might be some Google Assistant stuff at yeah. CES there.
This maybe. Year. Maybe a yeah. little. Just a couple. Yeah.
Yeah, and a real quick plug. The reason we went over to Best Buy earlier today, kind of going back to the same thing.
Forgot about that.
Is that Insignia, which is Best Buy's kind of in-house brand. I mean, they make cables and televisions and mm-hmm. just pretty much every random thing. They have a couple of different Google Home setups. And our Best Buy in our town is actually kind of small. And they actually had a whole half a row dedicated to speakers with Google Assistant built in. I mean, there were JBLs, there were Sony, and then there was one more there on the right. I can't remember what brand that was. And then the Insignias. And so, I mean, we're already starting to see kind of this ramp up. And there was another end cap with JBLs, yeah. you know, and you're starting to just see built in with Assistant, with Assistant, with Assistant.
Yeah,
and
Bose headphones are on display there as well.
And so I just looked at Gabriel while we were standing there, and I was like, yeah, we're going to see a lot of this at CES. Yeah. So we'll see probably Assistant and all sorts of stuff.
Well, I mean, last year we saw Alexa showing up in all of these devices,
right, sure.
you know. So I feel like this year it's going to shift a little bit. I'm sure we'll still be seeing some Alexa devices
and
showing
who knows,
up.
We could see, you know, Google is reportedly working on a touchscreen version to rival the Echo Show.
We might
see
that. Might be there.
The timing would be perfect right. for that. It really would.
Right.
And we'll talk. Robbie or I will talk later about in an article about the Insignia devices.
Yeah,
but if you have a Best Buy in your town,
go check it out.
It's an interesting little device.
Yeah, and they're highly highly discounted right now. So
yes.
I think the smaller version, which is a little smaller than the standard Google Home, is what, 70?
Yeah,
and then they got 70. The big one, which is, I don't know what else to compare it to, but it's a large speaker. They both pump out quite a bit of sound, and it's $90 right now, so
regularly like $150, I think.
Yeah, I think they're like 50,
so it has all off. Obviously Google Assistant does all the thing Google Home has, but it has some other features that you don't get in the Google Home.
Yep.
And it's a sign of where that market's going, because now that the Google Assistant is available for all these third-party manufacturers,
mm-hmm.
you're going to see it in everything. LG's putting it in washing machines, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna show up in everything, and that's kind of why the Pixelbook is positioned where it is, so that we kind of have a flagship device that says, hey, you know, Google Assistant's at the front and center of this experience, and learning how to use and leverage Google Assistant on the desktop versus in a phone has been an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll probably have a video or talk a little bit more about that at some point in the future.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about crossover. So you all have reported on a new Android app called Crossover, and I'll let you all talk about the details here of what exactly Crossover does. But, you know, this is a new tool that's out there for Chrome OS users to be able to utilize their Chromebooks in maybe a little bit of a different way. So what does it do who is it intended for, and what can you do with this Android app?
Yeah, so Crossover has been around for a while for mostly for Mac users. Have used it in order to be able to pull over those much needed Windows apps that they, when they decided to jump over to Mac OS, they needed that one thing, whatever that was, that may not have been available. And so Crossover has been working on this for a year and a half.
Almost 2 years.
Something like that. To get it on Android. And so it's been by invite only. And I had tried the invite version actually just a few weeks back. I saw something and it caused me to go, I'm going to try that. And so went through the process, got the app, and attempted to use it a little bit. But then today, it basically kind of came out of that status, which I guess we would call an alpha status, and now it's in beta. And so the interesting part is it's in beta in the Play Store, and it's called Crossover for Chrome OS. And so it's kind of cool to see. And again, it says beta right in the title, and it is firmly beta. So don't think that this is just going to magically run all your Windows apps. But it's cool to see a developer that's working on something specific, because this is the ability to run a handful. They say that there's like 13,000, I think, apps in their database that work with it. But you got to think about the vast amount of things that can run on Windows. I mean, yeah, we're talking
there's
about
a lot of caveats involved.
Yeah, and mediocre little stuff that you wouldn't even consider as an app, they can put on that list because it will technically run. So don't let that number make you think that you can just run anything on it. But we tested it a lot today, and there's an article on the website about this, but we tested it quite a bit today, because if you think about it, what it is it's Android emulating Windows. So it's using Wine. If you're not familiar with that, it's a Windows emulator that people using Linux run quite a bit. And so it's a version of Wine running in Android. Well, Android's running in Chrome OS, and we're not going to get into the depths of how Android and Chrome OS work here, but Android's sitting in a container right next to Chrome OS, so it has full access to all the hardware. So it's not like Chrome OS is emulating Android. It's there, and it's in the full framework's there. So it's not quite as janky as it sounds, but it's going to be similar to what you'd have running this on an Android phone. So even if you're on a pure Android device, you're still running a Windows emulator in Android. And so there's obviously going to be compatibility issues. Right. And when it says beta in the title, it means it. I mean, we tried, between the two of us, probably, 20 things at least?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I got nothing. Finally, got Steam to install. But as I downloaded and tried to install any games, those would not run. But Steam worked. Kind of worked. And the only thing I got to actually install and run as it was supposed to was Mozilla's Thunderbird email client. And I had no use for that, but at least it worked. And so take it with a grain of salt. It's there, and it's encouraging, I think. And I'll stop talking here. But it's encouraging to at least see it being done. I look forward to possibly what the guys at Droplet are going to eventually get to us. I know what they're doing. It's not a small undertaking. So people that keep asking, have you heard anything from Droplet? We've talked with them a little bit. Hopefully we're going to be talking with them more very soon. But what we're talking about doing with something like Droplet, these aren't simple things, and this stuff takes time, and it's a lot of work involved in general.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing. You have multiple outlets working at it from different angles. Mm-hmm. Obviously the container process already works with Android, and Google's still working on a lot of things on the container end of it. Then you have Droplet, you have Crossover. And they're all great, and hopefully they will all offer an outlet for different users who need different things on their Chromebooks. But it is a big deal, and as Robbie said, it is a lot of work. I was able to go through the install process for a number of apps on the Chromebook, and every one of them ran the installer, installed the app, but then I would get some crazy service error. Yeah. So obviously, there's a lot of minor tweaks that need to be done based on what device you're on, what app you're trying to install. So, and as far as Droplet, as Robbie said, to reiterate, we have been in contact with them. We do speak with them occasionally, and we're looking forward to talking to them very soon and sharing whatever it is they have to share with us. But for those who are asking, yes, it is still very, very much in the works.
Yep, absolutely. And, I want to go back to what I said just a minute ago, that, I got Thunderbird running. There's a reason for that. I wasn't just randomly you know, poking at things to install. I was looking for an app for a coworker who is messing around with a Pixelbook that we have at the office that has to be sent back pretty soon. And he's using it in a way to decide whether or not a Chromebook is something he could work with. He's firmly entrenched in Microsoft's Outlook, and specifically, I think Outlook like 2010 or 2013, whichever one allows you to sort by category. Like, that's his workflow, and he works through hundreds of emails a day. I mean, that's the entirety of what he does in front of a computer screen usually happens in Outlook. Like, mm-hmm. to the point where probably if he had a computer that only ran Outlook, he could do 80% of his job. You know, I mean, it's crazy that he uses it this much, but he's used it for a decade or even more. And so he has particular workflow things. And as most of you know, if you rip those things away and just say, hey, get your work done on this, because, you know, Gmail can do it, it can't quite do what Outlook's doing from a sorting feature and all that kind of stuff. So I was purposely looking for an email client that would work in some way, shape, or form for him. I was looking via Crouton, so running something in Linux and seeing what would work so that as he was using the device, maybe he could get to a point to say, hey, look, this is something that could work for me. And not in like some evangelical way of trying to go, okay, I'm going to convert him. I'm going to figure out whatever I can do to get him to come over to Chromebooks. It wasn't really doing that. It just almost like a challenge. Like, because for me, it was the same type of thing, right? You know, there was an initial thing. There was something that caused me to actually want to use Chrome OS over something else. And right. So kind of, I guess, as we wrap up, I thought about this earlier, and Gabe and I were talking, you know, like, this would be a cool thing to share really quickly about what makes us Chrome OS fans, you know, and it wasn't, probably wasn't someone coming and saying, hey, this is a better operating system than your stupid operating system. Yours is dumb, and the way you do stuff's stupid. You should do it this way because my way's right and your way's wrong. The conversations that devolve into that kind of garbage are just worthless and pointless. You know, there are people that need to use Mac OS, there are people that you need to use Windows, people that need to use Linux, and people that need to use Chrome OS. And being able to actually sit back and talk about those things and why we use them, I think is worthwhile. So, yeah. So for me, very briefly, and we're kind of wrapping up, so I want to get to this quickly. As we were talking about this earlier today, for me it was, I remember Chrome OS coming out as this thing that was an experiment, and you could put it on a USB stick and put it in a Windows laptop and run it. And it had no desktop. It was literally like just the Chrome browser. And I remember running it on there and doing a few things and staying in that environment for a kind of a prolonged period of time and thinking, huh, you know, I do a lot of stuff in Google Chrome. This is kind of weird, you know, that I don't need any of these other things. I just kind of missed the desktop because it felt a little, constricting. So a few months pass, and I mean, it was probably longer than that. Maybe it was a year. I don't know. Things get fuzzy. But the Samsung Chrome Series 3 Chromebook came out. So that was the $249 super plasticky, just cheaply made Samsung Chromebook. But they did a huge marketing campaign behind it. And I remember sitting in my living room and seeing, you know, Chromebook is for everyone. That was the whole thing. You know, for everyone, for everyone, for everyone. You know, for your dog, for your, you know, for the mom, for the sister, for, you know, whatever. And, you know, they're flashing all this stuff. And I can still see those ads and think. I remember thinking, like, oh, man, I kind of forgot about Chrome OS. You know, I forgot about, you know, how cool it was to mess around with that. And so I went and bought one. And I was at the point where I think I had just attempted to try Mac for a little bit and didn't like it and felt really weird with it. But Windows machines were constantly letting me down and getting bogged down or getting slow, or like this part didn't work or this part didn't work or the trackpad worked really weird. And after using a MacBook, you know, it's hard to go back to a Windows trackpad in general. They're getting better, but, you know, back then they were just terrible. Horrible. Terrible across the board, just terrible. And I just wanted a device that just worked and didn't have all the, you know, I need to update it for hours on end, and it slows down and blah, 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 all this stuff. And so I remember seeing that commercial and thinking, oh, I'm going to try it. And I got it, and I opened it and, you know, logged in and kind of just, you know, felt my way around the device. And it was like, man, this is simple. All the junk that comes with Windows and all these things is out of the way. This thing's just, it's breezy and it's lightweight and it's super fast and it was real cheap. And so as days went, I just kind of, instead of picking up my Windows device, I would pick this thing up because I could open it up and it was booted up. And I could open it up and turn it on and it was ready to go. And I could reset it and it was ready to go, you know, and it was so fast. And I just enjoyed it. And the trackpad worked like it was supposed to. And I'm like, man, this is cheap and it feels cheap. And somehow the trackpad is still awesome on it. And, you know, and there were just all these things. And I remember I would move it to the side and come back to my Windows machine. And all I would want to do is just go back to that Chromebook. And there's just this intangible thing that a lot of people I know that have tried a Chromebook and worked from it and used it for a few days, even when they try to go back to their old machine, there's something in them that just wants to go back to that. And so this coworker that I'm looking for this email client for, I think is dealing with some of that intangible stuff. Like, is this the most pragmatic choice for him to make right now? Probably not, because there's a piece of software that exists that he needs to get his work done. But the rest of it, all the rest of the stuff, he just wants a Chromebook to do that with. And so, you know, trying to bring it back to why we're talking about this, like crossover and things like it can be that thing, right? That it could be the thing that says, okay, I can use this as my crutch. This is my bridge to get from dependency on this operating system that I don't really want the operating system. I want the one app that I had on that operating system. It can get people into that place where, though they feel these intangibles of like, I want to use the operating system, I want to use Chrome OS so bad, but I can't because of that one thing, it can help them bridge that gap.
Yeah, right? and that's a great segue for, you know, how I'm using Chrome OS. You know, I specifically remember coming to work for the firm that I work for now, and Robbie at the time was a contractor working in the co-working space that we were involved in, and I remember coming into the office and I didn't have a device at the time. So I walk in and I'm like, hey, you know, is there a computer I can work off of? And, you know, my boss was like, oh, well, go find Robbie. He's got a bunch of Chromebooks laying around, so you can just go grab one of those. And literally, I mean, I just opened it up. I opened it up and I clicked on Gmail, which, you know, in those early stages was all I was working in really. And I just remember thinking, you know, you mentioned it earlier, it was so breezy, it was so lightweight, it was so out of the way, you know, and as I have evolved as a professional, you know, so much of what I do now is with video editing. And that's why things like crossover and the things that Droplet are doing are so exciting for me, is because you're right, those intangibles keep pulling me back to Chrome OS. I keep wanting to use it, and I do use it frequently, you know, as part of Chrome Unboxed. But as far as getting my work done, most of that has to get done on my 15-inch MacBook Pro that's, you know, beefed out so that I can do all my video editing. But these new things that are coming, you know, the Droplet and the crossover, and being able to utilize Chrome OS in maybe a little bit of a different way so that, you know, an app like KineMaster or any other video editing app might pop up to where I could say, hey, I can do that. You know, I can now maybe make that step into fully using Chrome OS. And I think that's the future. You know, that's what's coming. I know it's coming. You know, there are going to be developers out there figuring this stuff out so that people like me can do what I need to do and get my work done on a Chromebook, you know, on the Pixelbook, on the Samsung Chromebook Pro. And that's really exciting to me. And so whenever we hear about these things like crossover coming, I just get really excited. Right. And I'm excited for the future of Chrome OS. So.
And that's where, I mean, the crossover and Droplet and all those things, they're extremely exciting. And it does open opportunities for people to adopt a new operating system and maybe try something that they might like better, they just can't use right now. But for me, it's kind of from the opposite side of it. I came onto the Chrome OS boat in 2010, 11, I think, with a hand-me-down HP 14 from Robbie. I was working for a Ford dealership.
Maybe I am an evangelist.
You are. You are an evangelist.
It's kind of sounding like you are an evangelist, actually.
14 was my track.
Yeah, exactly. just take that. Just take that. But I
just try this and tell me what you think.
Where is it? Oh, it's in Georgia now. It's still alive. It's But anyways, I was trying to transition into web design, and I was using the HP solely for that. But I wanted to use the HP at work too. We had a bit of an antiquated infrastructure at the dealership that I worked with. It's a chain of dealerships here locally, and very dependent on Windows, and everything was, you know, infrastructure, network, all that stuff. And most of our CRM stuff was web-based, so I could do a lot of my work there, but I couldn't print. Even if the Chromebook could print, it couldn't print because I wasn't allowed to print from the Chromebook, and just some different things that kind of got in my way. The only real hang-up was that our CRM software did have a dependency on Microsoft Silverlight, and Chromebooks won't run Silverlight. So for me, I just found workarounds, and then eventually one day our sales manager bought a cloud-ready printer, and that pretty much solved everything for me. I could print from my Chromebook. I took my old Lenovo, and it's still laying dead in a closet somewhere. But for me, it's exciting to see developers opening doors to just severing those dependencies on specific things. You know, Microsoft doesn't even support Silverlight anymore, and yet you have so many software applications that are dependent on it. And to see developers moving towards this cloud-based system and starting to write stuff that's not just available for Chrome OS, but geared towards these type of operating systems. So to me, the Codeweaver stuff and Droplet, all of that, they're great, but they're also, what I hope to see is that they're a stopgap to the next thing, to where we truly have, you know, as far-fetched as it may sound, 5 years from now, we may have a fully functional online video editor that Joe can do exactly what he's doing on his MacBook right now. And that's what's exciting for me about it. And once I left the automobile industry, I put my Windows machine down, and I've never touched anything since. So.
Yeah, I mean, that as final kind of thing, like that's probably the most exciting thing about Chrome OS in general and Chromebooks. You know, as cool as it is to be able to run Android apps, and as cool as it is maybe to have Windows apps in some way, shape, or form running, and Crouton, and we've even talked about on the website about the necessity for some of those things. Ultimately, the end goal is web technologies get to the point where none of that stuff's really needed. Where progressive web apps take the place of standard installed apps that you just can go to a site, a place on the internet, and there take care of whatever it is you need to take care of. And sure, it puts a lot of dependency on the internet in general, but still, I think that's the where we put all the load on massive servers that live somewhere else, and we have these thinner clients that, you know, 80% of the work that we do is this quick hopping online to do whatever, and then even the bigger stuff like Joe was talking about where you need to edit down a video, that kind of stuff can be easily done. But some of that stuff is held back by infrastructure, and you know, as we see gigabit internet, you know, slowly but surely making its way through the United States and different countries. There's lots of countries that are way ahead of what the U.S. is doing. As faster internet becomes a thing, those things just open up even more. And I think that's where Chrome OS is uniquely positioned to continue to grow without the need for all the legacy stuff kind of hanging around there. And we see that that's the future, because even you see Microsoft attempting to have a cloud-based operating system, right? I don't think it's doing very well. I think everybody that buys the Windows Surface laptops upgrading to Windows Pro, but you know, they're attempting it.
Right. And in Microsoft's defense, Microsoft Azure is a huge cloud-based system for large enterprise and stuff, and they're doing the same thing. They're running their Microsoft, the same Microsoft applications you've been used to using for the last two decades, they're running those in a server-based system in the cloud with Azure. Google is buying up anything and everything that's cloud-related. Partnering with companies that they're just building a larger infrastructure that's going to be capable of doing the things that you're used to doing, but doing it in the cloud, so you can have the thinner clients and the lighter weight operating system and nice devices that aren't dependent on software that's going to be just dreadfully slow in 2 years. Because that was another one of my problems with Windows. I don't care what device you have, unless you just don't install anything on it, even with just the regular updates from Windows, the device is going to slow down. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sad to say, but that's just the way it is. Chrome OS, as we've seen, not in every device's case, but most of the devices, they just get faster with every update. So
it's very true.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. You can find show notes over at chromeunbox.com/podcast, along with tons of other info covered in this episode. Additionally, you can find us online on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus by searching @ChromeUnboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.